I'm Clark Neely, Vice President for Criminal Justice at the Cato Institute in Washington, D.C., and this is Race, Violence, and Medicine.
And today we're talking about?
We're talking about non-delegation and the Gundy sex offender registration case.
All right, y'all, don't want to miss this. Thanks. Welcome to Race, Violence, and Medicine. I am Dr. Brian H. Williams. Thank you for tuning in. And today, I'm bringing back one of my favorite guests. This is Clark Neely. He is the Vice President of Criminal Justice at the Cato Institute in Washington, D.C., and author of the book, Terms of Engagement, How Our Courts Should Enforce the Constitution's Promise of Limited Government. And today, our topic, we're going to be talking about how the sex offender registry has intersected with the Supreme Court and a separation of powers. Now, how does it all get to come together? I will let Clark deconstruct all of that for you. So, Clark, thanks for joining us today.
It's really great to be back. Thanks.
All right, Clark. First, give some background about what the Cato Institute is and your role there.
Sure. So, the Cato Institute is a 40-year-old libertarian think tank based in Washington, D.C., and what it tries to do is articulate kind of enlightened libertarian policy across a variety of areas, including the one I work on, which is criminal justice. And the bottom line, essentially, is that for libertarian philosophy, the main touchstone is relinquishing the use of force against others. In other words, we don't seek to compel people to embrace our vision of the ideal policy. Instead, we want people to pursue whatever policies they think are best in a peaceful way, in a way that doesn't involve coercing others to share that vision.
So your area of expertise is constitutional law, so I figured you were the perfect person for me to ask this question about this New Yorker piece I read a few weeks ago that talked about this Supreme Court case, the Gundy case. Can you summarize that for us, please?
Yeah, so there's a federal law called the Sex Offender Registration and Notification Act, or SORNA for short, and the law essentially imposes a number of obligations on people who have been convicted of various sex-related offenses. And the without diving too deep into the guts of the statute, the issue in the case is that when Congress amended the statute recently, instead of detailing exactly who it does and doesn't apply to, and keep in mind this is very complex because we're talking about all different kinds of crimes, we're talking about different types of convictions, people with a different status, whether you've served your sentence or not. So there's a lot of people that it could potentially apply to. And then the question is, well, who does it apply to? And it's a really important question because if it applies to you, comes with a lot of reporting requirements, obligations, restrictions, and so forth. And instead of providing any real detailed explanation of who the reporting requirement applies to, Congress essentially just kicked it over to the Attorney General, the head of the U.S. Department of Justice, and said, you know what, why don't you fill in the blanks and just figure out who this law should apply to? And we're talking about hundreds and hundreds of thousands of people who may or may not be covered by these incredibly onerous requirements, effectively at the whim of the Attorney General and not as the basis of any sort of deliberative legislative conclusion. And that's what we call a separation of powers violation.
So that's important. So essentially, Congress has delegated some of its responsibilities to the executive branch, which is where the DOJ falls under. Now, I think most people will have some visceral reaction to how we treat sex offenders, even ones that have served their time. When you take that case and universalize it to how that decision by Congress to delegate their powers to the Department of Justice, what impact can that have on other parts of American law?
Yeah, I mean, it's really one of the most important issues in government, and it boils down to this: whose job is it to make policy, including particularly policies involving criminal law, the kinds of things, for example, that you can or cannot be put in prison for? Let me give you an example. Imagine that Congress wrote a law that said the U.S. Department of Justice is hereby empowered to reduce the amount of vice in America. So instead of telling us what constitutes vice, what laws are permitted, what aren't, you just have DOJ deciding, should we allow gambling? And if so, what kinds? Maybe we'll just prohibit all of it. Various sex-related offenses like production of pornography or prostitution, all the way from, you know, to the consumption of various intoxicants. Maybe DOJ decides that we'll go back to alcohol prohibition and that will be completely illegal. I think it's not too hard to see what a disaster it would be for democracy if instead of legislating at a fairly detailed level, Congress simply kicked it over to an executive branch department and said, you know what, protect us from vice and you fill in the blanks. That's not legislating. That's just delegating your authority over to another branch of government that is not the policy-making branch.
Okay, I'm going to make a leap here to, let's take, for example, the Affordable Care Act, what people call Obamacare. Do you see, is there any way that this decision could impact the enforcement or the legality of that law? And I know that you've said before you think the law is federal overreach, but since it's in place now, could this law affect that?
I have to say I'm not an expert on the details of the Affordable Care Act, but it is certainly understood, well understood, that the act leaves up to the Secretary for Health and Human Services tremendous discretion in filling in various policy blanks in terms of, you know, the what constitutes an adequate coverage and various ways that providers have to comply with the law. So what we're really talking about, though, here is, again, is the division between the legislative branch, in this case Congress, and their responsibility to make policy, and the executive branch, whose responsibility is to execute or enforce that policy. What we don't want to have is a situation where Congress is routinely delegating to executive branch officials and agencies legislative or policymaking power, and they do it all the time. And that's bad because the executive branch agencies are much less accountable than an elected legislator because bureaucrats are appointed. They're not voted into office, and they can't be voted out of office. So if you're going to be if you're going to come down to the question of who should be making policies that affect our lives, the Constitution clearly says democratically accountable legislators. But instead, Congress goes ahead and kicks a lot of this policymaking stuff over to the other branch, the executive branch, where the officials are much less accountable and the process provides much less feedback that hopefully will ultimately result in better policy.
So that's interesting. How do we get to that point where – so I guess what you're saying is non-delegation is not in the Constitution, and that is something I guess over time has become – I don't know about the norm, but understood that Congress can make policy, but that they will delegate the responsibility to enact those policies to some executive branch of the government.
Most of us have a discrete job. I mean, you're a doctor, right? And you perform surgeries. Well, now imagine that you decided that your job, instead of just performing surgery, your job would be deciding how much nurses should get paid and the entire staff of the hospital. And you should also decide who should clean up which parts of the hospital and how they should do that. You also have decided that you're going to run the parking garage and you're going to decide how that works. You're going to decide communication strategy for the hospital. You're going to decide finance strategy for the hospital. And you take on all of these jobs. What you'd find ultimately is that because there are only so many hours in the day, you would have to start essentially delegating responsibility for certain kinds of decision making. Why? Because you've just taken too much on your own plate. And that's exactly what Congress has done. You have 435 members of Congress, and they have to make decisions that include, for example, how to spend $5 trillion every year. 435 people cannot possibly give sufficient attention to decide how $5 trillion should be spent. And that's only one thing that Congress does. So what do? Well, just like the doctor in my hypothetical, they delegate policymaking authority and decisions to the executive branch bureaucrats who run these programs. But the problem is you can delegate executive authority to those people. What you're not supposed to do is delegate legislative authority, meaning policymaking decisions. And yet that's what Congress – it's exactly what they have done because they've simply bitten off far more than 435 people could possibly chew.
So what is the solution to that, if there is one?
I mean, it's a tough challenge, but the two basic solutions are, first, for the judiciary to start pushing back against Congress so that Congress pulls in its, you know, kind of ambitions and stops biting off so much and really focuses more on the activities and the legislative issues that are actually delegated to it in the Constitution. I mean, there's – if you go look in Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution, there's an actual list of things that are – for want of a better way of putting it, Congress's business. And Congress has gone so far beyond those constitutionally delegated issues that that's part of the problem. The other thing the court should do is essentially draw a brighter line and say to the Congress, look, if you're going to make policy, then you have to – well, the Constitution assigns to you the duty to make policy, and you can't delegate that to other people. You can't say, you know what? We can't really come to an agreement about which people should be covered by this Sex Offender Registration and Notification Act, so we'll just hand that off to an executive branch official, the Attorney General. Let him fill in those blanks. Those aren't blanks. That's policy. And the only branch that can make policy is Congress, and the Supreme Court needs to get more active about saying to Congress, look, you've got to take ownership, and only you can make policy.
Well, that's a great segue to your book, Terms of Engagement, How Our Court Should Enforce the Constitution's Promise of Limited Government. And takes us back to the case we brought up in the very beginning, which was the Gundy case. What was the outcome of that case? Do you recall?
Yeah, so the court deadlocked 4-4, which means that the lower court decision was affirmed, which is that there was no separation of powers violation or no non-delegation violation when the Congress essentially said to the Attorney General, hey, why don't you decide who's covered by this law. But the interesting thing was that for reasons we don't need to get into because they're a little bit inside baseball, there were some very strong signals from members of the court that if the case came up in a slightly different posture, there's a pretty good chance that in fact there would be a 5-4 majority to actually strike down what Congress did in handing off all that authority to the Attorney General. And there's an effort to actually get that issue back in front of the Supreme Court. So stay tuned. I don't think we've heard the last from the Gundy case.
So if I can put that in terms that I understand, a 5-4 decision to strike down that lower court decision would mean that Congress cannot delegate those powers to the executive branch and then take more ownership of what they're doing, which would reassert the judiciary's role in ensuring that our court enforces the Constitution's promise of limited government.
Couldn't have said it better myself.
All right. And look, I'm just a doctor trying to decipher all this, everybody. But Clark Neely, Vice President of Criminal Justice at the Cato Institute. And I will say he has one of the most educational Twitter feeds out there. Pretty much every day you get a quick, pithy breakdown of some issue. So I highly suggest you follow him if you're on Twitter. What's your Twitter handle?
Con Law Warrior, all one word, Con Law Warrior on Twitter.
All right. Clark Neely, and check out his book, Terms of Engagement, How Our Courts Should Enforce the Constitution's Promise of Limited Government. I am Dr. Brian H. Williams. Thank you for tuning in. You can check up on me at brianwilliamsmd.com. Follow me on Twitter at bhwilliamsmd. And as always, I appreciate you for tuning in. Thank you.